And now back to Bobby Likas Car Clinic and your host, Bobby Likas.
And welcome back to Bobby Likas Car Clinic. Call with your car questions at 888 Car Clinic. Joining me on the line now is Jeff Cooper, Senior Vice President of the Renewable Fuels Association. Folks, you've asked me questions about ethanol, and today we're going to answer those questions. Jeff is the Senior Vice President of the Renewable Fuels Association. In addition to overseeing market analysis and policy research, Jeff provides regulatory support and strategic planning for the association and its members. Jeff also focuses on issues related to life cycle analysis, sustainability, and ethanol co-products. Prior to joining the Renewable Fuels Association, Jeff served as Director of Ethanol Programs for the National Corn Growers Association. In this role, Jeff led research and promotional efforts to increase the production and use of corn-based ethanol. Previously, Jeff served as a captain in the U.S. Army, specializing in bulk petroleum supplies and logistics. Welcome to Bobby Likas Car Clinic. Jeff, glad to have you in the house.
Well, thanks so much, Bobby. I'm pleased to be with you this morning.
Let's kick it off. Every time we talk about ethanol, someone brings up the notion that using corn to make renewable fuel causes higher food prices. Now, we've been hearing that farmers are harvesting a record crop this year, and corn prices are the lowest they've been in more than 4 years. Yet food prices are still rising, and we still hear people suggest that increased ethanol production causes higher food prices. What's the truth?
Well, thanks for that question, Bobby, and we continue to hear this. I mean, it really is one of those myths about ethanol that just won't die. It's really been dogging the industry for 3 decades. But the truth is, there really is no meaningful connection between ethanol production and food prices. When we go out and, you know, talk to the public and consumers, we're always amazed by how many people think that the corn we're using to make ethanol is the same kind of corn that they eat, at summer barbecues, sure, corn on the cob, or the same kind of corn they get in the can at the grocery store. We do not use sweet corn to make ethanol. What we use is called field corn or feed corn. It's the same kind of corn that we use to feed cows and pigs and chickens. So that's kind of the high-level misperceptions that people have about corn ethanol. But they also don't seem to understand, usually, that ethanol plants don't just make ethanol. When we take a bushel of corn, which is 56 pounds of corn, and sometimes that's hard for people to visualize, so, you know, if you think about like a large-sized bag of dog food, that's roughly the quantity of corn we're talking about. When you take that bushel of corn and put it through an ethanol plant, you're not only getting almost 3 gallons of ethanol, but you're getting back about 17 or 18 pounds, so about one-third of that bushel, as animal feed, and we call that animal feed distiller's grains. It's very high in protein, it's very high in energy content, and it's fed to, again, beef cattle, dairy cows, pigs, and chickens, not just in the U.S., but really all around the world.
Let's take a look at the food prices historically and the impact that ethanol has had on food prices. We've been using, as I understand, 13 billion gallons approximately of ethanol annually for the past 4 or 5 years. So if there really was an impact on food prices, would we not have seen that?
Yeah, I think we would have seen an impact if there truly was one. You know, what we have seen is corn prices have gone up. I'm not going to argue for 1 minute that ethanol hasn't had some impact on corn prices. In fact, that was one of the reasons that farmers built the ethanol industry from the ground up in the first place. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years ago, the price of corn was below $2 a bushel, and farmers really couldn't even break even at those prices. It cost them more to grow that corn than it was worth. So farmers took it upon themselves and got organized and built a new market for corn and an added value to that crop, and, you know, basically built this industry from the ground up. And it helped stabilize the price of corn and did add value to their crops. But just because we've had higher corn prices doesn't mean we've had higher food prices. And that's because corn is just such a minor component of those retail food items. When you think about a box of cornflakes, you know, that costs $3.50 or $4 in the grocery store, there's about 5 cents worth of corn in that box of cornflakes. Or even in a gallon of milk, there's about 15 or 16 cents worth of corn in that $4 gallon of milk. So you can see, even if corn prices fluctuate, it's not going to have a market impact on the retail prices of those food items. The right question is not, you know, are food prices higher today than they used to be? Of course they are. The price of a car is higher, and the price of clothing and college tuition and everything's higher than it used to be. So the right question is food price inflation abnormal because of higher corn prices or because of ethanol? And the answer to that is no. We've seen food inflation rates since the beginning, you know, really since the advent of the ethanol industry, food inflation rates have actually trended lower than they were previous to the emergence of the industry. And we're actually seeing food inflation that's quite a bit lower today than it was in the 80s and early 90s.
We're talking with Jeff Cooper, Senior Vice President for the Renewable Fuels Association. So Jeff, what are the real drivers of consumer food prices?
Well, I think it's very interesting to think about this. There's been some analysis done by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and others looking at when you go into the grocery store and you spend $100 on groceries, you know, what is that $100 really paying for? And it's interesting to see how that breaks down. If I go into the grocery store and spend $100, only 17 of those dollars are paying for the actual farm commodities that are in the groceries or the ingredients, you know, that are in the groceries. The other $83 that I'm spending is paying for the packaging and the advertising and the labor, you know, the people working at the store, the stocking the shelves and stuff, the transportation, the processing of that food, and everything else that's required to get that grocery item from the farm to your kitchen table. So only 17% of what we spend on food is actually reflecting the value of those farm commodities.
Got it. While we're on the subject of oil, another hot-button issue that we hear a lot about is greenhouse gas emissions, or GHG. And we know that the transportation sector is responsible for, as I understand, a third of the total greenhouse gas emissions. Share with our Car Clinic listeners and viewers how using ethanol affects the GHG emissions from our automobiles.
Sure. Well, you know, there have been a number of studies on this subject over the years that have looked at, you know, what is the effect of replacing some portion of your gasoline with ethanol on greenhouse gas emissions and carbon dioxide emissions in particular. And the Department of Energy, in their most recent analysis, says that ethanol made from corn reduces greenhouse gas emissions by about 35% to 40% compared to conventional gasoline. If you have listeners who are concerned about, you know, the potential impacts of greenhouse gas emissions, you know, certainly using ethanol and other biofuels can reduce those emissions from our transportation sector. You know, last year alone, the 13 plus billion gallons of ethanol that we used had the same effects as basically removing about 8 million cars from the road. So you can think about the emissions that were removed or avoided because we used ethanol as being equivalent to about every registered vehicle in the Chicago metro area.
Wow. So it appears to me, and you speak of greenhouse gas emissions, that if we had an increased use of ethanol, i.e. E20, E30, would that not reduce emissions even greater?
It would, because like you said, I mean, you're basically displacing hydrocarbons with oxygen when you increase the level of ethanol in your gasoline. And because ethanol is 35% oxygen, the fuel combustion is more complete, and that helps reduce those harmful tailpipe emissions, and not just carbon dioxide that we're talking about. It using more ethanol displaces the use of toxic gasoline components like benzene and toluene and other hydrocarbons that are toxic and are not biodegradable and lead to, you know, particulate emissions. And so if we're using ethanol in lieu of those components of our gasoline, we're going to see, you know, lower emissions of fine particulates. We're going to see lower emissions of carbon monoxide and non-combusted hydrocarbons and other things. It's really pretty simple. I mean, if you put a gallon of ethanol next to a gallon of gasoline, you can just tell by looking at them the contrast. You've got ethanol is basically looks like water. It's colorless, it's odorless, and it's sitting next to gasoline, which we all know what gasoline looks like. When you burn those substances, I mean, you can tell just by looking at them that there's going to be a pretty stark difference in the emissions that come from those.
Absolutely. I have one final question. We've been told for decades that ethanol from waste sources, what is referred to as cellulosic ethanol, is just around the corner. I'd like for you, in this time remaining, to share with our Car Clinic listeners and viewers the commercial status of cellulosic ethanol. And what is cellulosic ethanol?
Sure. Well, this is really a great story, and you're right. We've been hearing for 3 decades now that, well, we're going to be making cellulosic ethanol soon, and so we won't need to worry about food prices, and we won't need to worry about land use and all these other things that people have concerns about. Cellulosic ethanol is essentially using the fibrous portions of plants, so the cellulose portions of plants, to make ethanol rather than the starches and sugars. And basically any living organism has cellulose in it. You think about leaves or grass clippings. I mean, that's cellulose. And so we have seen tremendous progress in the commercialization of those technologies just in the last year or so. And I'm really happy to report that just in the last 2 months, we've seen the first 3 commercial scale cellulosic ethanol facilities begin production. So we talked earlier about how the starch in that corn is converted to ethanol, and then everything else is passed through to animal feed. Well, part of that everything else that's passed through is cellulose and is fiber. And there's a plant in Galva, Iowa, that is extracting that little bit of fiber that's left over in the corn kernel and converting that to ethanol. So we have seen tremendous strides in commercialization of cellulosic ethanol this year. This is really the year, 2014 will be remembered as the year that cellulosic ethanol did in fact arrive.
No doubt. Jeff Cooper, Senior Vice President for the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, the website is ethanolrfa.org, correct?
That is correct. www.ethanolrfa.org.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Bobby. I really enjoyed it.
And what a great information, and a very knowledgeable individual. And he's directly Senior Vice President of the Renewable Fuels Association.